Today Radio is made possible in part by a generous grant from International Society for Animal Rights, ISARonline.org.
Welcome to Animals Today, your home for serious talk about animals. I'm Peter Spiegel. Did you see the story a few weeks ago about a truck that was transporting four sharks? This semi encountered bad weather in Florida and crashed into the median, killing one of four sandbar sharks, although the reports vary as to how exactly the shark died. They were being moved from Marathon, Florida to an aquarium in Coney Island, New York, where they were to be part of an exhibit opening next year. The director of the transport company, Dynasty Marine Services, remained tight-lipped about the protocols they employ to move sharks as well as the types of containers they use. And of course, there were the usual sensational news stories about sharks on the highway and jokes on social media about land sharks. But to me, this is just another example of a formerly wild animal harvested from its home and now dead at the hands of people who wanted to make it an attraction, an object of entertainment. And we know that recently there's been a lot of attention focused on marine mammals in captivity, and we have covered this extensively. But do you think a shark wants to live a life of captivity in a small tank any more than a dolphin or an orca does? And that's not even a small part of the nasty stuff we are doing to sharks and rays around the world. So we have invited Sonia Fordham, president of Shark Advocates International, to share her views on what's important now in shark and ray conservation efforts. Welcome, Sonia.
Hi, nice to be with you.
Likewise. Sonia, what was your reaction to that story of the sharks dying on the road in Florida?
Well, I have to admit, I didn't have a huge reaction. Most of my work, I focus globally on preventing shark overfishing in particular. Mm-hmm. And often, stories like this, like you mentioned, get a lot of attention in the press when they have to when they involve just a few animals. And yet, like you mentioned, there is a lot of nasty stuff happening to sharks around the world. And so I have to kind of try to keep things in perspective.
Yeah.
So I focus more on the overall threats to that particular species. I think they were sandbar sharks, which have suffered a lot of overfishing, particularly off the U.S. Atlantic coast.
Yes.
And I spent a lot of years trying to get basic safeguards and limits on how many can be taken in fishing operations and working on a recovery plan. So while it's really unfortunate about the crash, the sharks that did survive, I believe you said they were going to Coney Island, so that should be an aquarium that's connected with the Wildlife Conservation Society, which does a tremendous amount of good things for sharks around the world and close relatives of sharks, the rays, and are really actively engaged in education and funding conservation efforts for sharks and rays. And they have a tremendous opportunity to reach people and teach them to respect sharks more than fear them and to sort of speak up for good shark conservation policies. And as far as my experience goes, these people, other people in aquariums, really treat the animals, particularly sharks, quite well, and like I mentioned, are engaged in their conservation. So those sandbars might not be what they picked for their own lives, but it's not a picnic out in the Atlantic Ocean with high levels of fishing that we have. And so I'm more focused on trying to make sure the sandbar mm-hmm. recovery plan works as it was intended, and we bring those populations back to healthy levels in the wild.
Let's move to further discussion about sharks in the wild, and I know one of the issues you're very concerned about is finning and the devastation that causes to populations. Besides the cruelty, the governor of Texas just signed a law to ban the trade of shark fins in the state of Texas. It was the 10th U.S. state to do this. How important is this?
Well, I don't focus particularly on the shark fin bans. I'm focused on the practice of finning, mm-hmm. which is obviously quite wasteful. And I'm sure many of your listeners would see the cruelty in it. And it's actually an issue where the conservation groups and the animal rights groups do a lot of work together, because we're pretty much united in fighting the practice of finning and not only making it illegal, but making sure that those laws are enforceable and enforced. So the state fin bans are more about the trade in fins, mm-hmm. and one important thing to remember is that they vary quite a bit from state to state, and there's a concern that on the Atlantic coast, a lot of the sharks that are fished in those states that have fin bans are exempted, and we don't hear a lot of that about the exemption. So there are still mostly smaller sharks that people that they just don't tend to get as much attention from the public. Smaller species, different types of dogfish, that are the main species fished on the Atlantic coast in terms of volume, and in most cases they're exempted from the Atlantic state bans in terms of trade. So,
oh boy.
I mean, it can get complicated, but in general, it doesn't. There are different exceptions. It's important to look at the exceptions to make sure rules are doing what people intend them to do. But overall, the practice of finning has been banned in the Atlantic and off the Texas coast since 1993, and then nationally since the early 2000s. And we're working, the U.S. has recently put in some rules or is phasing in some rules to make sure that when people take sharks, they land them with their fins still attached so we can be absolutely sure that they weren't, their fins weren't cut off at sea. And they weren't sort of picking and choosing parts and landing them in that way. So keeping the fins attached if you're going to have a shark fishery is the most reliable way to enforce a finning ban, to make sure you're really preventing finning. And we have that for most sharks. There's one shark in the Atlantic, again, the smooth dogfish, also called a smooth hound. It's doesn't get enough attention in my opinion. It's smaller and maybe a less photogenic or fascinating than a white shark, but it now has one of the weakest finning bans in the world. So I'm very focused on getting a national finning ban that treats all sharks the same, regardless of their size. So again, a bit of a shift in focus to, to the bigger picture.
Yeah.
But the good news is that the U.S. overall is quite a champion in trying to prevent finning around the world and regularly brings proposals for strong finning bans to international fisheries meetings, and is pretty reliable in bringing this issue up with other countries to make sure we can have stronger finning bans around the world.
How many sharks are killed yearly around the world through finning?
It's really hard to tell. I think, you know, in general, there are different numbers about how many sharks are killed overall, how many sharks support the global shark fin trade. A very reliable number was somewhere in the tens of millions. About 38 million or up to 73 million of sharks, their fins support the international or the global fin trade. That doesn't mean that they were all finned, though.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the overarching problems we have in shark conservation is a lack of information. For so long, sharks, and particularly rays and skates, the close relatives, have just been low priority for fishery managers and conservationists at one point. So we don't have all the information on fishing that we'd like, and overall there's not enough monitoring of what's happening at sea. So it's a little bit of a challenge to figure out exactly how many were killed from finning. But what we know is there's a strong demand for shark fins for shark fin soup in Asia, particularly in Asian market. And we have seen conservationists in China in particular and Hong Kong having some success in terms of educating the public about consumption. So it does look like the demand is declining a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But we still have places where the shark finning bans are just not strong enough, just aren't enforceable enough. So if we had, say, a global measure, or we had all the countries that are fishing sharks agree to just keep the fins attached, then we would know for sure that at least they weren't finned. Now, that won't get at the overall overfishing problem. It's really about finning. So the mortality and whether the sharks are kept, whether they're killed anyway, it's a complicated situation depending on the market for the meat.
Yes.
Right? But in general, for all of these problems, we need and we're working to more information on what's happening at sea.
We're speaking with Sonia Fordham, president of Shark Advocates International. We're talking about sharks and their related cousins, rays. And you also mentioned skates And if you want to tell us a little bit about skates also, we're happy to hear that. After the break, we'll continue our discussion and learn about threats to these wonderful animals, which sometimes are scary, but need protection. This is Peter Spiegel. You're listening to Animals Today.
Hi, this is Dr. Lori Kirshner, and I want to thank you for listening to Animals Today. Make sure to visit us on animalstodayradio.com, where you will see all our previous shows and where you can download them free. That's animalstodayradio.com, or you can listen on iTunes. Also, make sure to like us on Facebook and join the discussion. Animals Today gets a lot of its support from the nonprofit group Advancing the Interests of Animals. Please visit them at aianimals.org. That's aianimals.org. And I hope you'll consider making a donation to help pay for the ongoing broadcast of Animals Today. Each week on Animals Today, we strive to bring you the highest quality, most up-to-date information about all animals, how we treat them, and their place in society, while promoting greater respect and kindness towards them. So thanks for your support. That website again is aianimals.org. And thanks for listening.
Did you know that more than half of the animals that enter our country's shelters are euthanized every year? This amounts to millions of loving adoptable dogs and cats being killed due to our nation's pet overpopulation problem. Too many dogs and cats are permitted to have litters, but there's just not enough homes to take them all in. We strongly encourage people to adopt pets from a shelter instead of buying from a breeder or a pet store. When you adopt from a shelter, more than likely you are saving a life. Please tell your friends and family about the pet overpopulation problem and encourage them to adopt from a shelter and save a life. And together we can stop this terrible ongoing tragedy and senseless killing of millions of loving dogs and cats. So spread the word. Adopt, don't buy. And remember, always have your pets fixed. This message is brought to you by Advancing the Interests of Animals. Visit them at aianimals.org. That's aianimals.org.
Attention invention and gadget lovers, join our invention testing club called the Da Vinci Club. Every month we're going to send you a brand new gadget, a brand new invention, things that are not on the market before, and you fill out a couple questions and you get to keep the invention. Maybe the invention's the new octa-core tablet that's coming up. Maybe it's the new garlic cutter. Every single month you'll get a brand new invention, and the value could be several hundred dollars or $20-$30. Every month it's different, but we need your evaluation, and it only costs $20 a month. Call 1-888-877-0490. That's 1-888-877-0490, or go to mycoolinventions.com. It's mycoolinventions.com. How about that? A brand new invention every single month. Innovative technology nobody's ever seen before. You get to see it first. All you have to do is answer a few questions. Call 1-888-877-0490. Here's the problem. Month after month, you pay for your home security with those silly bills. Solution? The Activator Home Security System. You plug one activator into the wall of your house. In 30 seconds, it scans your whole house. It's like Scotty put shields up. The house has shields. It's protected. If anybody touches a window or if anybody touches a door in your house, whatever you've plugged into the activator turns on. Imagine that. The guy rattles the door. The lights turn on. The music turns on. Whatever you've plugged into it turns on. Light and sound deter criminals. How about this? You come home late at night, you put your own key in the door, the light comes on for you. The activator welcomes you home, stays on for 3 minutes, and then starts to protect you. First it welcomes you, and then it protects you. No other security system has been like that before. No monthly fees, no nothing. You plug one in. Normally they're $99, but here at the deal of the week, you're not going to buy one. You're going to get two for $99. It's $200 worth of stuff for $99. Call 1-888-877-0490. That's 1-888-877-0490, or go to mycoolgadgets.com. Even if you have a home security system now, still get one, because this warns you before someone's broken a window, before someone's crossed the threshold of your house. It's a great additive to your house security system, and it's a great security system all alone. And the first 50 people won't get two, you'll get four activators. The first 50 people will get four, still only $99. $400 worth of security for $99, no monthly fees, easy to install, and a money-back guarantee. Call 1-888-877-0490. That's 1-888-877-0490. Or go to mycoolgadgets.com. That's mycoolgadgets.com. Be secure. Be safe. Get the activator. 1-888-877-0490.
You're listening to America's Talk Radio Network, where America talks.
Welcome back. I'm speaking with Sonia Fordham, president of Shark Advocates International. Sonia, you mentioned the Chinese in particular. It must be a big, big task to change the hearts and minds of a huge country about their views on shark fin soup. How are we ever going to do that?
Well, I would say, again, I feel like a lot of my responses have a good news and a bad news, right? It's certainly a daunting challenge, but I would say that a lot of conservation groups are really rising to that challenge. I don't personally do a lot of work in China. I'm more sort of Atlantic-based in particular, except for some global treaties. But groups like WildAid, there are a number of conservation groups, Bloom, WWF, working specifically on the educating consumers about shark fin soup and trying to reduce demand for that particular item. And there's been a lot of attention to they're reporting a lot of good news in terms of actually reducing demand, educating consumers, getting the word out, getting people to think about what they're ordering. So I think it's a huge challenge, but they're making a lot of progress. What I try to do to complement that is spend a lot of time sort of spreading the love. So we have a lot more awareness about shark fin soup, about, you know, the importance of big sharks as predators in the ocean, much more awareness than when I started in the early 90s.
Yes.
So that's very encouraging. And now I'm sort of shifting into, okay, we have to spread that love and concern to the other closely related species that share this inherent vulnerability that sharks have to over-exploitation. Mm-hmm. They generally grow slowly and mature late and produce a small number of young. So they can be overfished very easily, and that when they're depleted, it can take a long time to bring them back to healthy levels. So many species of sharks, big, exciting, sexy sharks, have been used sort of as flagship species to raise awareness and get in conservation safeguards for sharks. So actually the white shark, even though it was the star of Jaws, mm-hmm. and can a lot of people are afraid of them, they're really one of the most protected sharks in the world now.
Yes.
And so we're trying to sort of spread the concern to smaller sharks, which mm-hmm. can be quite vulnerable, not get as much attention. I mentioned several types of dogfish in particular,
yep.
that are not being, they're not getting the same level of attention or the same quality of protections that some other sharks are in many cases. But also the skates and the rays and the sawfish, these are all considered generally rays. We're starting to call them flat sharks.
Okay.
To get the message across that
yeah.
these are really just a different body type, essentially. They have the same general biology, and they share this vulnerability to overexploitation. So trying to get more attention to overfishing of skates in particular in this country, lacking safeguards for smooth dogfish or smooth hounds. It's the second largest shark fishery in the United States, and there are no limits on it, but just doesn't get the type of attention that a white shark does.
Yeah.
So, again, making progress, but have a lot of work to do. And that might bring us to perhaps the sawfish.
Yeah, tell us about the sawfish, because as we were emailing earlier, that caused me to read a little about it. I didn't know much about this particular creature, and it's fascinating and another particular concern of yours.
Yes, I spend a lot of time on sawfish. They're one of my pet species, at least from a personal standpoint. Sawfish are technically rays, but they have this long saw as a snout. They are the most endangered of this whole group of sharks and rays. Around the world, there are five species. They're all listed on the IUCN Red List as endangered or critically endangered. And the population we have in this country that's still around is a small-toothed sawfish, And it's essentially restricted now to Florida when it used to travel as far as New York in the summertime. And that was the first shark array listed on the U.S. Endangered Species list back in 2003. And I spent a lot of time on that developing with the government and scientists a recovery plan and then trying to get that implemented.
Yeah.
But on a global basis, the IUCN Shark Specialist Group, for which I serve as deputy chair, we have made sawfish the subject of our first global conservation strategy because of the dire status of all the populations. And so last year we came out with this global strategy that sort of maps out ways to better protect sawfish around the world.
And what are they facing? Are they overfished? Are they losing their habitat? What exactly is happening?
Yeah, there are a lot of strikes against sawfish. So we generally talk about them being overexploited because they're really too rare to sort of target anymore. Mm-hmm. In different places, they might have been targeted either by commercial or recreational fisheries over the decades. But it's usually more of an incidental thing. It's certainly now.
Yes.
It's quite incidental. But, you know, as you can imagine, that saw can get entangled in all types of fishing gear, particularly nets. So incidental catches are right now the biggest threat to sawfish around the world. They do also, though, perhaps more so than a lot of other sharks and rays, they have this habitat dependence. When they're small, they live in just a few inches of water. And so, for example, our small-toothed sawfish is really dependent on protected areas of the Everglades now, and they're really particularly dependent on certain types of mangroves and certain salinities. So they do depend on healthy nearshore habitat and similar habitats around the world. And as you know, I'm sure we're losing those habitats, particularly mangroves, at an alarming rate. So
yeah.
That's another sort of strike against them. And then beyond that, they have this inherent vulnerability that most sharks and rays have, that they tend to grow very slowly and
yes.
not have a lot of babies.
Yeah. We're speaking with Sonia Fordham from Shark Advocates International. After the break, we'll continue our discussion and learn what you can do to help sharks and their cousins.
This is Dr. Lori Kirshner, and I want to thank you for joining us on Animals Today. Each week, we explore the wide variety of new and important issues concerning the welfare and rights of animals, how people treat them, and where they fit in society. From whale protectors risking their own lives on the open seas, to lawmakers fighting to pass legislation to assist animals, to kids volunteering at their local shelter, Animals Today provides timely and in-depth analysis and interviews with experts and advocates from around the world. To listen, join us every week on this station, listen on iTunes, or go to animalstodayradio.com, where you can access and listen to all the prior shows. And like us on Facebook and share your views. Much of our financial support comes from the nonprofit group Advancing the Interests of Animals. That's aianimals.org. So check them out. This is Dr. Lori, and thanks for listening.
Sound of a dog whose vocal cords were cut just to stifle her voice. It's called devocalization, and it's done to cats as well. Devocalized animals rasp and wheeze, cough and gag for the rest of their lives. Some are rendered mute. And for what? So a commercial or hobby breeder can keep many animals without having to listen to them? So show dogs will be quiet during transit between shows or in the ring? So an irresponsible pet owner can leave a dog alone for hours every day? Animals Today says shame on anyone who would have a dog or cat devocalized, and shame on the veterinarians who perform this unnecessary, inhumane surgery on them. Please speak out against devocalization of dogs and cats. Use your voice to protect theirs. This message is brought to you by Advancing the Interests of Animals. Visit them at AIAnimals.org. That's AIAnimals.org.
Do you got any ideas?
I have a great idea.
Pitch it to me. Pitch it to me.
Hey, I got an idea. Well, let's hear it.
Successful businesses start with great ideas and cool inventions. Hi, everybody. I'm John Cremins, the Doctor of Shopology. Join me and ACOS the Solutionist on My Cool Inventions every week. We continue our ongoing search for America's top invention. You can be the next one. Together, both ACOS and myself provide over 60 years of experience in the industry of inventing products and presenting them on shopping channels worldwide. Every show, we give our advice on how to successfully produce your product. Along with great information and featured industry guests, you'll also get a chance to listen to the inventors of some of the coolest inventions and vote on which projects you like. You be the shark. Now, if you have a $1 million idea in your head, submit it to us, and you can be selected to be on our show for your chance to be voted America's top invention. It's true reality radio, where you decide and regular American families like yours are lifted one innovation, one inventor, one American at a time.
Attention invention and gadget lovers. Join our invention testing club called the Da Vinci Club. Every month, we're going to send you a brand new gadget, a brand new invention, things that are not on the market before, and you fill out a couple questions, and you get to keep the invention. Maybe the invention's the new octa-core tablet that's coming up. Maybe it's the new garlic cutter. Every single month, you'll get a brand new invention, and the value could be several $100s or $20, $30. Every month it's different, but we need your evaluation. And it only costs $20 a month. Call 1-888-877-0490. That's 1-888-877-0490. Or go to mycoolinventions.com. It's mycoolinventions.com. How about that? A brand new invention every single month. Innovative technology nobody's ever seen before. You get to see it first. All you have to do is answer a few questions. Call 1-888-877-0490. Here's the problem. Month after month, you pay for your home security with those silly bills. Solution? The Activator Home Security System. You plug one activator into the wall of your house. In 30 seconds, it scans your whole house. It's like Scotty put shields up. The house has shields. It's protected. If anybody touches a window or if anybody touches a door in your house, whatever you've plugged into the activator turns on. Imagine that. The guy rattles the door. The lights turn on. The music turns on. Whatever you've plugged into it turns on. Light and sound deter criminals. How about this? You come home late at night, you put your own key in the door, the light comes on for you. The activator welcomes you home, stays on for 3 minutes, and then starts to protect you. First it welcomes you, and then it protects you. No other security system has been like that before. No monthly fees, no nothing. You plug one in. Normally they're $99, but here at the deal of the week, you're not going to buy one. You're going to get two for $99. It's $200 worth of stuff for $99. Call 1-888-877-0490. That's 1-888-877-0490. Or go to mycoolgadgets.com. Even if you have a home security system now, still get one, because this warns you before someone's broken a window, before someone's crossed the threshold of your house. It's a great additive to your house security system, and it's a great security system all alone. And the first 50 people won't get two, you'll get four activators. The first 50 people will get four, still only $99. $400 worth of security for $99, no monthly fees, easy to install, and a money-back guarantee. Call 1-888-877-0490. That's 1-888-877-0490. Or go to mycoolgadgets.com. That's mycoolgadgets.com. Be secure, be safe, get the activator. 1-888-877-0490.
You're listening to America's Talk Radio Network, where America talks.
Now, another area of interest are these contests where rays are targeted. We've talked about wildlife killing contests in the context of coyotes on Animals Today, but rays, I see photos online of these mostly men with their spear guns surrounded by dozens of dead rays. What is going on?
Yeah, this is actually just starting to come to light, and there are some animal groups in the Chesapeake Bay region that have released a video and are calling on governors to stop these tournaments. So they're just starting to be brought out into the public and it's into the light of day. The species that they're targeting with the bow hunting is a cow nose ray. So again, a little bit of a larger issue for this species overall, if you compare it even to a lot of sharks, is particularly vulnerable. So cow nose rays have just one baby usually a year after they're 7 or 8 years old. So usually just one pup a year, maybe every couple of years. And so their populations are not equipped to withstand intense fishing pressure. So you would think that that would argue for a precautionary approach to conservation and management of their population. But the opposite is true. Again, a species that hasn't gotten as much attention as some of the more photogenic, although I think cow nose rays are pretty photogenic, and they're a real popular species with people in aquariums, but they just haven't received the priority. So we actually have very limited information on fishing.
Yeah.
What I'm concerned about is there are no safeguards in place, no limits on the bow fishing, the bow hunting, but also no limits on how much can be taken on a commercial basis. They're taken incidentally in fisheries that target other species, but there's no limit on how many can be taken.
Yes.
And there's decades of scapegoating all the problems with oysters, with clams, with scallops, now with crabs, sort of scapegoating this cow nose ray and saying, well, that, you know, they're eating too much and they're overpopulating, but there's no real strong evidence that their populations have increased much, and actually biologically they're incapable of you know, population booms.
So what are you?
A really vulnerable animal and no limits and no population assessment and not even the information to do a population assessment and figure out how much removal would be sustainable over the years. So we're again starting to get some traction on this. I think actually thanks in a large part to these animal rights groups who are targeting the bow hunting tournaments, because finally managers are starting to take this issue up and look at some sort of solutions, and hoping to have a scientific workshop to get some sort of basic advice for limits, not just on the recreational but also the commercial take. And in the meantime, I've been focused on the commercial landings, because there is a campaign to market them as seafood, and they've done a lot of press to say, you know, if you eat a ray, you'll save the bay, and playing up this idea that there's too many and they're eating too much, again without the benefit of a population assessment or any safeguards in place. And they're regularly, particularly seafood interests from Virginia, regularly touting rays at international seafood shows, and very open about their interest from places like Europe and Korea, which traditionally eat a lot of skate. So it's conceivable that they might build up a market.
Mm.
And with such a vulnerable animal, it could just go awry very quickly.
Wow.
It takes a long time to do a management plan, especially when different states have to agree. So I'm working on trying to get the states, particularly the mid-Atlantic states, to get together and put some basic precautionary limits on and get some better scientific information.
Sonia, what can individual people do to help the sharks and the rays and the skates? Where can they participate in this discussion and make their voices heard?
Yeah, well, I'm glad you asked. That's because that's really, really important for improving shark and ray conservation, and actually quite dependent on the public support and the public voicing their concern to their various lawmakers. So really, there's so many opportunities at local levels, state levels, regional levels, and international levels. But about the issues that we discussed, I would highlight that sawfish, we talked about how we had a recovery plan, and actually we're seeing some encouraging signs that the population might even be increasing, so that recovery plan might be working. The bad news is that we don't have full funding for that recovery plan from Congress, and we really need some champions within Congress to fully fund recovery of sawfish and bring them to a higher level. They really, when you compare them to other species listed in the Endangered Species Act, they're just not really getting their fair share. And that's an issue where people, even, you know, in inland states, the appropriations process involves all types of members of Congress from all over the country. And that's where even if you don't live in a coastal state, you might have a representative who has a big say in appropriations. So writing to Congress and asking to fully fund the sawfish recovery plan would be an excellent thing to do. Mm-hmm. More practically, people that see sawfish in Florida should report every sighting. People that fish for them should never bring them out of the water, or resist the opportunity to take a photo and really focus on getting that animal safely released. On the East Coast, we talked about a number of issues that CalNOS raised in particular. The states that we really need help with are Virginia and Maryland, also perhaps North Carolina. Those would be the key states where the governors need to hear that people are concerned about the treatment and the lack of safeguards for CalNOS rays. So the governor level there. We didn't talk a lot about skates, but there are many species of skates managed under one plan that's basically a New England plan, but some of those species are still in trouble. So in general, different types of lawmakers, members of Congress, but also governors need to know that people are also concerned about the recovery of skates and recognize that they're essentially flat sharks and very vulnerable to overfishing.
Yeah.
And then more globally, I would say it always helps to have people contact the higher levels, the Secretary of Commerce, the Secretary of State. The State and Commerce divisions are the ones that represent the country at many international meetings. So giving them encouragement and thanks for pushing sound proposals for shark and ray conservation. So just basically encouraging that record to continue, pushing for strong finning bans around the world. It's an uphill battle, but the U.S. is in the lead. But they need encouragement to keep doing that. And also similar proposals for just basic fishing limits for sharks and rays at international waters.
Sonia, the website, your website, has a wealth of information. Tell people the address and let's encourage them to check out what you're doing.
Yeah, it's www.sharkadvocates.org. Also probably more active on Twitter at Shark Advocates.
Okay.
And we also have a Facebook page.
Okay, Sonia Ford, I'm president of Shark Advocates International. Thanks very much for joining us on Animals Today.
Thank you so much.
As temperatures climb, please remember never to leave your dog in the car, even for just a minute. Because even with the windows cracked and your car parked in the shade, the temperature inside can climb up in a matter of minutes, high enough to kill your pet. If you love your dog, leave them at home where it's cool and comfortable. And if you see a dog or other pet in a car, you may only have a minute to save their life. Here are a couple of steps you can take. Make an announcement in the store or business that car is parked nearest to. Also, call the police department or animal control right away. Remember, it only takes a minute or two for a dog to get seriously ill or die in a car on a warm day. So swift action can save a life. Dogs are unable to cool themselves the way people can, so never leave a dog or any animal inside a car on a warm day, not even for a minute. This message is brought to you by Advancing the Interests of Animals. Check them out at aianimals.org. That's aianimals.org.
There is no getting around it. The great outdoors isn't so great for your cat. From speeding cars to toxic lawn chemicals, coyotes to cruel humans, cats are no match to the dangers of today's world. The good news is animal behavior experts say cats don't need to go outside to be happy. Your family will be happier and healthier too without the ticks, fleas, diseases, and the dead critters the outdoor cats bring their owners. And you will never have to explain to a crying child who or what hurt her pet or why he hasn't come home. Cats can enjoy a happy and safe life indoors. The key is to provide attention, exercise, and a stimulating environment. Play with your cat. It's fun for both of you. You can hide toys around the house too. Just make sure there can be no detachable parts that can be swallowed. You can protect your cat from becoming a tragic statistic. Tomorrow may be too late. This message is brought to you by Advancing the Interests of Animals. Visit them at www.aianimals.org. That's aianimals.org.
Here's the problem. Nail polish, hair dye, graffiti, tar. How do you get those stains out? Use Stains Are Out. Any stain, anywhere. Nail polish, oil, lipstick, pet stains, old stains, any stains, this will get your stain out. In fact, if it doesn't get your stain out, we'll buy the bottle back from you. Made with natural banana oil, oil from the skin of a banana, biodegradable and organic. Stains Are Out is the solution. Pour it on and get your stain out. Normally, bottle of Stains Are Out sells for $29.99. Hyper concentrated, each bottle will make 16 bottles of stain remover. $29.99 for 16 bottles of dilution. And here's the deal. If you buy a bottle of Stains Are Out right now, we'll give you three bottles. That's 48 bottles worth. That's the deal. Buy one, get three bottles for $29.99. Call 1-888-877-0490 or go to mycoolgadgets.com.
It's storm season. Bad weather is fast approaching, and if your power goes out, you'll need a strong flashlight. And that's where the Blackout Buddy emergency flashlight begins. You'll have a powerful LED flashlight right at your fingertips when the power goes out. Now, normally, a Blackout Buddy emergency flashlight retails for $24.99. We have a special offer today. If you call right now, 1-888-877-0490, that's 1-888-877-0490, you can get two of the Blackout Buddy emergency flashlights for only $24.99. But you have to call now. Call 1-888-877-0490. When the power goes out, the Blackout Buddy comes on. It plugs directly into your wall socket for constant charging. And when the lights go out, boom, you have super bright LED lights lighting the way. Call right now. Call 1-888-877-0490. You don't get one, you get two for just $24.99. But call right now or go to mycoolgadgets.com. That's mycoolgadgets.com.
Attention invention and gadget lovers, join our invention testing club called the Da Vinci Club. Every month we're going to send you a brand new gadget, a brand new invention, things that are not on the market before, and you fill out a couple questions and you get to keep the invention. Maybe the invention's the new octa-core tablet that's coming up. Maybe it's the new garlic cutter. Every single month you'll get a brand new invention, and the value could be several hundred dollars or $20-$30. Every month it's different, but we need your evaluation. And it only costs $20 a month. Call 1-888-877-0490. That's 1-888-877-0490. Or go to mycoolinventions.com. It's mycoolinventions.com. How about that? A brand new invention every single month. Innovative technology nobody's ever seen before. You get to see it first. All you have to do is answer a few questions. Call 1-888-877-0490.
Problem. Somebody breaks into your home. The solution is the Activator. It operates before an intruder even crosses the threshold of your home. As soon as they touch a window or door, bam, the Activator turns on a light. It turns on a stereo. It turns on something that lets the intruder think that there's somebody at home. Now, you might wonder how this actually works. Well, it's declassified military technology. They used to use this for triggers for alarms and other things. This, I gotta tell you, it works every single time. Appearances can sometimes mean everything, and boy, for an intruder, if a light comes on or sound comes on, they're out of there. You want the Activator. Now, normally, Activator sells one for $99. You see it on infomercials. Not anymore. If you buy two Activators right now by calling 1-888-877-0490, we'll give you two more free. That's four Activators, all for only $99. Call 1-888-877-0490. Or you could go to mycoolgadgets.com. That's mycoolgadgets.com.
You're listening to America's Talk Radio Network, where America talks.
Welcome back to Animals Today. I'm Dr. Lori Kirshner. I now want to play for you a segment I broadcast approximately 5 or so years ago about the devastation that occurred in Katrina and planning for natural disasters for your dogs and cats.
But what about our animals in natural disasters? What can we do as pet owners to prepare for storms and earthquakes or hurricanes, whatever? And what can the government do to help our pets in the event of a natural disaster? And we all remember when Katrina slammed into New Orleans as a Category 4, I think, hurricane about three and a half years ago. And we all know the horror stories and the terrible devastation that occurred to people and to homes and schools and roads. People still speculate over causes of the destruction of the city's flood wall system. And, you know, some would even say that what happened in New Orleans was not a natural disaster. It was due to some multiple federal failure. But listen, the point is a hurricane or natural disaster did occur that resulted in massive destruction. And we're never going to forget the devastation that occurred from Katrina. And as an animal lover, we don't want to forget that pets played a role in some of Katrina's countless horror stories. I know a lot of people out there probably thinking, you know, how can I even mention a concern for people's pets in the disaster when people lost their homes and their jobs and their security, right? But we must think about the animals. Many of those families lost what they considered as a family member. We talked about this, their pet. It's a family member to them. And to many of those families, you know, true, their pet was not that important to them compared to the lives of, or to, compared to their own lives or their family's lives or their homes, or for whatever reason, they left their pet behind to die. And some owners expecting to return a few days later left food and water for their pets. And you know what happened? The days turned into weeks and pets had to struggle or survive without supplies or the love and care of their owners. But in any and all of these cases, thousands of animals suffered and died. And good came out of it, though, I have to tell you, because provisions were made for the animals for future disasters because of what happened in Katrina. It was estimated that 600,000 pets were killed or left without shelter as a result of Hurricane Katrina. Thousands died from drowning and starvation, illness, and dogs tied up in backyards were left to drown. Okay, you know, I don't have to tell you specific details. You can picture in your mind the way these animals died. But also, in some of the pets that actually made it out of the storm, they were separated from their owners at shelters. And most of them never reunited with their owners. Remember, most helicopter pilots, remember this, and rescue boat captains refused to load pets in order to hold more people. And some buses would not allow pets. So while some field hospitals did allow pets to enter with their patients, and I don't know if you remember this, the Superdome, you know, when everyone was congregating at the Superdome, when that was evacuated, they were not allowed to take their pets with them. So rescue teams were set up in the worst hit regions in response to desperate pleas from pet owners. And the Humane Society of the United States, in conjunction with the Louisiana SPCA and many other groups, had hundreds of staff and volunteers working in Louisiana and Mississippi. And so many of the rescued animals had no identification tags. So even if in cases where owners could be identified, they've proven hard to track down. Concerned animal lovers across the nation adopted Katrina orphaned cats and dogs. They were sending animals all over the country. I personally know of one shelter here in our own valley that took homeless and abandoned and sick pets in from Katrina. But the biggest issue to emergency authorities at the time were the people who stayed in New Orleans during Katrina stayed because they refused to leave their pets behind. And we spoke about this at length. We know to a lot of people these animals are like their children and their family. And a survey conducted after Katrina found that 44% of those who chose to ride out the storm, they did it because they could not evacuate with their animals. So a bill was initiated in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, when the abandonment of many thousands of pets and other animals brought the matter of animal welfare in disasters to national attention. The Pets Evacuation and Transportation Standards Act, okay, PETS, PETS, was a bipartisan initiative in the United States House of Representatives. They set it up to require states seeking FEMA assistance to accommodate pets and service animals in their plans for evacuating residents facing disaster. The bill passed the House of Representatives on May 22, 2006, and it was signed into law by President George W. Bush on October 6, 2006. The bill is now public law. I don't know if you remember, this bill was initially inspired by the story of Snowball. I don't remember exactly, but it went something like this. Some police officer or some authority confiscated a little boy's dog named Snowball from the little boy. And you just see pictures of the boy crying and you know, give me back my little dog, Snowball. And because I guess the dog wasn't allowed on the bus. So this attracted national attention. And everyone at the time was on a mission to help locate Snowball and reunite him with the boy. And I do remember there's some initial reports saying that they finally located and found Snowball. And then these original reports of recovery or Snowball were inaccurate. It ended up being another dog, and Snowball was never found or reunited with the boy. So inspired by the story of Snowball, U.S. Representative Tom Lantos, Democrat, California, introduced the Pets Evacuation and Transportation Standards Act to the House of Representatives. So, you know, our pets depend on us for their safety and survival. As responsible pet owners, we have an obligation to know what to do in case a disaster strikes, which can occur at a moment's notice. Whether they are a natural disaster from fire or storms or man-made disasters such as a terrorist attack, the best way to beat it is to plan early. And the devastating effects of the hurricane has pushed local and federal government to either change their policies or develop new ones to include the safety of pets, okay? But you and I need to make sure we do everything in our power to make sure our family, including our pets, are safe. You need to establish a good plan of action. And the best time to think about the safety of your family, including your pet, is prior to there being a disaster.
Animals Today Radio is made possible in part by a generous grant from International Society for Animal Rights, ISAR Online.